Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI COVID Response Pivotal Radio, where we explore people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. I am Ursula Rudenberg, one of your hosts for the hour. Thank you for listening in.
And I'm Ann Kinzel, your co-host in isolation, joining you via Zoom. Here's your COVID-19 county numbers update on cases who have tested positive. Story County, 40. Boone, 29. Hamilton County, 7. Hardin, 9. Polk, 1,875. Marshall, 655. And Dallas County is at 625. Yesterday was the official National Nurses Day, starting National Nurses Week. National Nurses Week begins each year on May 6th and ends on May 12th, Florence Nightingale's birthday. Kevin Krausman is a nurse, and we'll be speaking with him in a few minutes.
And then later in the show, we're going to return to the topic of voting, and also Mike Brown from Ames Electric will be answering, what do you do if your lights go out? This happened recently, about 2 weeks ago, when a large part of downtown Ames went dark. And Anna Banana Bread is here, and she'll be coming back to share more heart-to-heart messages.
National Nurses Week is a federally recognized week honoring the noble profession. Wow. Requests for such recognition started as early as 1953. In 1982, the American Nursing Association's Board of Directors formally acknowledged May 6 as National Nurses Day, an action which affirmed a joint resolution of the United States Congress designating May 6 as National Recognition Day for Nurses. That year, President Ronald Reagan signed a proclamation that National Recognition Day for Nurses be May 6th. In 1990, the American Nursing Association's Board of Directors expanded the recognition to a week-long celebration, declaring May 6th through 12th, 1991, as National Nurses Week.
The week of recognition ends on Florence Nightingale's birthday on the 12th. I have always grown up with her name, but I actually did not know her real story, so I looked it up last night. Nightingale, in case you don't know, was a British social reformer and an icon of Victorian culture who is seen as the founder of modern nursing. The Lady with the Lamp was a manager and trainer of nurses caring for wounded soldiers during the Crimean War, and later in her life was pivotal in professionalizing nursing roles for women at her nursing school in London. Hers was the first secular nursing school in the world, and it's now part of King's College in London. So, in recognition of her pioneering the field, the Nightingale Pledge is recited by U.S. nurses at pinning ceremonies, and the Florence Nightingale Medal is given out by the International Committee of the Red Cross for the highest international distinction a nurse can achieve. The medal is awarded for, and I'm quoting here, exceptional courage and devotion to the wounded, sick, or disabled, or to civilian victims of a conflict or disaster, or exemplary service for a creative and pioneering spirit in the areas of public health or nursing education. And I think we can all agree that under the current circumstances, we've heard about many nurses who would qualify at this point.
So in light of the kind of courageous service on the part of nurses, we recognize Nurse Week on Local Talk. And I just want to say for me that when I was a young hospital attorney, the one thing I learned very fast was nurses are in charge. Kevin Krausman is a nurse working here in Ames at Mary Greeley Medical Center. Welcome to Local Talk, Kevin, and thanks for being the voice of the nursing profession today.
Yeah, thank you guys for having me.
What does National Nurse Week mean to you personally?
I mean, the gifts and thank yous are very important to us. It kind of just honors the whole year of what we've put together through that previous year. To me, my favorite part about Nurses Week is getting on social media and seeing all the nurses with stamps on their pages saying, proud to be a nurse. Even this year, I see it bigger than years in the past because right now isn't necessarily a great time to be in healthcare. But yeah, for me, Nurses Week this year probably has been my favorite Nurses Week. And like I said, the thank yous and the gifts and all that are great. But really to me, the camaraderie of what nurses are sticking together, kind of like we're all in this together type of thing. Nurses really take that and run with it if we can.
It's a moment of professional pride, really.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Pride. And it's just an honor to be a nurse, in my opinion.
How did you choose to join the nursing profession, Kevin?
Well, actually, I didn't start my career out as a nurse. I actually was going to Iowa State in exercise science. I knew I wanted to be an exercise specialist in some way, but I really wanted to work with heart patients. My dad had had a couple heart attacks, and I really honed in on cardiac rehab after his second heart attack. So that's what I was going to do with my life. As I was going to Iowa State, I did my internship in cardiac rehab, and they said, you know, you really should look at nursing if you want to be a cardiac rehab specialist. So I went back to nursing school after graduating from Iowa State, and going through my clinicals and everything, I decided cardiac rehab probably wasn't the path for me. I love being a hospital nurse. I currently work on our float team, so I don't have a set location where I work. I work anywhere from our emergency room to labor and delivery, surgery, mental health unit, hospice house.
Wow, that's broad.
Yeah, I pretty much go everywhere.
So you really work all over Mary Greeley Hospital.
I do. I get to see a little bit of every single patient. Honestly, I don't know if I'll ever change locations just because I do get so much variety. Yeah, and I never have the same day ever.
Kevin, you're an Iowan, right?
I am originally from Pomeroy, Iowa, up in northwest Iowa, and currently live in Roland, Iowa with my family.
So for an Iowan, what is the path to become a nurse?
So there's many different paths that you can take now for nursing, becoming more widespread. For me personally, I graduated from Iowa State with a bachelor's in kinesiology and then went back to DMAC in Boone and got my RN degree there. I am currently working through Western Governors University out of Salt Lake City, Utah, on my bachelor's of nursing, which should be finished here in the next 3 to 4 weeks.
So what's changed for you at Mary Greeley since COVID-19 started up?
Biggest change for us, I would say right now, is that we come to work every single day knowing that we could be exposed to COVID. Most people would run the opposite direction as that. Nurses here at Mary Greeley run towards it instead. I don't feel like a lot has changed in our day-to-day work. Our morale is super high right now at Mary Greeley. Surprisingly, you would think that the morale would be low, but everyone's really bonding together, sticking together, and they're willing to do whatever we can to make the best experience for all the patients that we have here, even though it's not under the best circumstances that they're here.
Why would you run towards danger? What makes you want to do that?
A lot of people would say it's an adrenaline junkie type thing, but to me, honestly, I would say it's knowing that we can help other people at all times. I know with the COVID going on, we're not allowing family members and stuff like that. So me being able to be there for that family as well as the patient means a lot to me as a nurse, and I know a lot of other nurses here too. We're more than willing to hold that patient's hand through everything that we have to hold it through.
So, Kevin, that brings me to a question that I think you've kind of partly answered, but I'd really like you to explain a little bit more. I had a firsthand experience with nurses because my father actually was at Mary Greeley during the month of April, and he wasn't there because of COVID-19. He had surgery, but he's very old, and he was not an easy patient to have. I could not help but see that he was always treated with tremendous patience and compassion. And the nurses clearly were always just trying to see what would make him more comfortable. And it was very striking, the level of patience and compassion that was shown. And even my father ended up, you know, going on and on about how his experience with the nurses at Mary Greeley really made him feel that there are many, many good people in the world. It made a huge impression on him. So it was clear to me that nursing is a very special kind of work that requires a particular type of person. Where do you learn, and where do other nurses learn that kind of patience and compassion to be able to put the patient first no matter what?
Honestly, I don't know if it's something that you learn. It's more of something that you just have. Our culture here at Mary Greeley is something that I know a lot of other places don't necessarily have. Kind of one of our mottos that we live by is doing what's right, not only for the staff, but we mainly try to do what's right for the patient. We're a very patient-centered care facility. Anything we can do, whether it makes us bend over backwards or not, our goal is to have the best outcome for the patient and the patient's family. But as for the compassion thing, I'm not sure it's something that you can teach. I just think nurses kind of have, I mean, I think that's the start of going into the nursing profession, is that compassion that people have even prior to starting nursing school. I think in my perspective, starting nursing school, they weed that out in a hurry. If you don't have that compassion right away, a lot of people don't make it in the nursing world.
Part of your education really is finding out whether you have that in you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think, and it's not necessarily built into the curriculum or anything, but I feel like as a nurse, you know if you have it or you don't after your first semester of college.
So when a patient you know, is really unfair and kind of makes criticisms that don't really deserve. What do you say to yourself to be able to turn around and really show caring for that person instead of responding to, you know, a difficult person?
I always use the motto Q-tip, quit taking it personally. I never take anything that a patient says to me personally. We teach that to all of our staff here. Not only that, but when people are in the hospital, they're at their most vulnerable time of life. They don't want to be there. We totally understand that. So the things that they say to us isn't necessarily what they truly mean in real life. We understand that there's a lot of stress involved for patients being in the hospital. So yeah, the biggest thing is just don't take it personally. Let it kind of roll off our back and still give them the best care no matter what. I guess from shift to shift, it can completely change. And from day to day. So when I leave here, anything that any of my patients have had stay here at work. I don't worry about them. And the next day I don't remember them. So I start over brand new fresh with the patient every single day, no matter if I've had a bad day with them the day before or not. So
Kevin, you're a male in a profession that's been dominated historically by females. Well, and we know that there's shortages of nurses across the country. What would you say to men who would want to join but maybe are a little afraid to join the nursing profession?
When I first said I was going to be a nurse, a lot of people looked at me differently. I still walk into many rooms and get called a doctor. I proudly, you know, fix that and tell them, no, I'm a nurse. And I know you're not supposed to say, I'm just a nurse. I'm your nurse today. To the males out there, you're very wanted in our profession right now. We're well utilized. That's what I'll say. It's a growing number coming into our profession. I think it's great. I recommend nursing to anyone who wants to give it a try. It's a great profession. I get something out of my day every single day I'm at work. And yeah, I really do enjoy it.
Well, you mentioned the morale at Mary Greeley Hospital, or I guess I should say Mary Greeley Medical Center. And I've been told that working at Mary Greeley is a sign of accomplishment in the field. Tell us about how the hospital has been recognized.
Yeah, so in the last year, Mary Greeley has been recognized as a magnet status hospital, which basically shows patient quality care. And it basically shows that, like earlier you had said, the nurses are in charge. The magnet status really does emphasize nurses running a hospital. Hmm. It's definitely a nurse's award. It's not an award. I mean, it's obviously an award for the whole hospital, but really based on what nurses are, nurses' retention, nurses' education, quality of care, patient satisfaction. All those numbers are what go into a magnet status. And then also this past year, we received the Malcolm Baldrige Award. That's for exemplary organizations. Only 430 nationwide have the Malcolm Baldrige Award. I believe we are one of very few, if not the only one, who has both awards at the same time.
The magnet recognition, that's kind of the gold standard for nursing, I'm told.
Yeah, that is the gold standard for nursing. It's the top recognition you can get as a hospital. I want to say there were just over 400 organizations nationwide this year, but they are worldwide. It's a worldwide thing. I got the ability to go to the Magnet Conference this year in Orlando, Florida, get recognized on stage. It was really cool to see because there was people from all different countries there being recognized as Magnet.
And wow, that's fantastic.
Yeah, it was super exciting.
For those of you who are listening in the audience, Kevin is at the hospital right now. He's wearing his, I'm not sure, you don't call those scrubs, right? That's your hospital outfit.
they are considered scrubs, okay. But yes, it's my hospital outfit. Okay. And as soon as I get off this Zoom call, my mask will go on for the rest of the day.
Okay. And I just have one more thing that I'm curious about. Is it really true that when you became a nurse that you recited the Florence Nightingale Pledge? Did you do that?
Yeah. At our graduation ceremony, our pinning ceremony is what we called it. Everyone stands up and recites the entire pledge of Florence Nightingale. That is very true. Everybody who's pinned gets to recite that.
Okay.
Don't ask me to recite it right now.
And her birthday will be on the 12th. And this is National Nurses Week. And thank you, Kevin Krausman, for joining us from Mary Greeley Medical Center. Literally. And thank you for being the voice of the nursing profession.
Thank you guys for having me. And I want to thank all my other coworkers out there who make Nurses Week for everyone.
Okay. Thanks so much for joining us. Yeah.
Yeah.
Have a good day.
You can hold my hand, don't be afraid, you're not alone, though it seems that way. I know that time is ticking by, and you've been missing home, but you don't believe in miracles. Who knows what life brings? Masterminds, though I'd love an invincible shield, it's enough to be patient and kind. I'm not super, but I promise I'll try. When you feel pain and the darkness settles, I'll brave the rain. Fight through this battle, and I'll be here through thick and thin. You grow a little stronger, feel a little better, and time is slow. I can't control, but I promise you, I'll give you mine. For some people, what makes one a hero is to be worthy and leave no man behind. Though picking up the hammer seems lovely, it's enough to be patient and kind. We can save the world one person at a time. So listen to the beating sounds. We could get lost, but miracles can be found. So let's prepare our infectious smiles, put on our gloves and don our gowns. And there's no cave, and it's not profound, but we promise to keep our feet on the ground. For me, what makes someone a hero is to empower and change their minds. I can promise that things will get better, but I promise for you, I will try. Hope that's enough of a hero in your eyes.
I promise things will get better. That song is called What Makes a Hero, and it's a tribute to nurses, written by Vanessa Chua, a second-year nursing student who performed the song for the School Nurses Day celebrations this year at the Nursing School of the National University of Singapore.
We have another guest. Lucy Martin is Story County's auditor, and that puts her in charge of facilitating the voting process in Story County. Welcome, Lucy.
Glad to be here.
Yeah, thank you for your vigilance in doing this work. Let's talk a little bit about the June election. It's going to be like no other one we've experienced. The National Conference of State Legislatures describes it thusly: voters standing in line close to each other, handling ballots and using touchscreens make for a potentially toxic stew of community transmission of the novel coronavirus. The goal is to address both the practical and legal questions around running elections while also decreasing the potential for spreading the virus. Nothing like a simple job, Lucy.
Yeah. So elections always sort of break down into logistics, and now the logistics are just that much more complicated because we're dealing with COVID-19 issues as well.
So the name of the game is mitigation strategies, right? What's in the works for that?
Well, luckily, we've had a series of emergency declarations to help all county auditors, and there's 99 of us in Iowa, serve the people of Iowa in the safest way possible. So, and the Secretary of State's office sent out to all active voters, which is an actual term. It doesn't mean you're just an active voter. It actually means that you're active in our system of voter registration. So, that mailing hit Story County probably Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday of last week. And we started seeing results of it on Friday of last week. And at this point in time, just to give you some scale, we've probably processed, as of last night, over 5,000 requests for absentee ballots. And in the primary of 2016, we mailed out 278 mail ballots. Wow. And we had a total of 4,774 voters. So we've already exceeded total turnout of the last like election. Now, all those ballots that we sent out will not be returned, but probably at least 85% of them will be. That's not your only way to vote. Those requests do need to be in my office by 5 p.m. on Friday, May 22nd to get a mailed ballot. We have voting on election day, and you can still come to the office and vote, but we are encouraging people to access the mail option when possible.
So recently I got a letter in the mail from Story County. That is the form to fill out to get a mail ballot, right? That's the request form.
Right. It's called the official Iowa absentee ballot request form is what it says on top.
So it's not a ballot itself. It's just a request.
It's the request for the ballot. In Iowa, you have there's no fault absentee. You can request an absentee ballot for any election, but you do have to request a ballot for each election that you want to participate in. There's not a sign up for permanent absentee balloting.
And you don't have to have an excuse of some sort.
Right.
No excuse is a reason.
Yeah, no, we call it no excuse absentee balloting. And a lot of people call it early voting, but it's an absentee ballot. They are handled just like all of our absentee ballots are counted by the absentee board on election day. And that's when they're tabulated. So, yes. And we have a long tradition of voting absentee in Iowa. So a lot of people are familiar with the process. For a big election, we see about 40% of voter participation is via absentee. For a primary, it's usually a lot less because those are mostly just the very interested voters. Generally, a primary election in Story County is a very low-key event. So already we're exceeding what we've seen in like elections in the past. So it's a sort of uncharted territory, shall we say?
Yeah. So what again is the deadline if you want to get the absentee ballot? What again is the deadline?
If you want it mailed, it's May 22nd. If you want to vote in person, you can do that at the Story County Administration Building up through June 1st. We're only open right now, and the building is only open for voting purposes from 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. Monday through Friday. And then on May 30th, which is a Saturday, statutorily, we're open 8 hours. We'll be open 8 a.m. to 4 p.m. that day. We have set up, the people processing the voters are behind plexiglass. You get a pen. It's a one-use pen, so you take it with you. We have always, for the past several years, used our ADA-compliant touchscreen. It's not a touchscreen, actually. It's a pressure screen, so you use the pen to mark your choices there, print your ballot, and then leave. One of you had asked about curbside voting. That is an option for people that are unable to physically enter the building. And we've always had curbside voting for both absentee and day of. Conflate that. Some counties are actually doing all of their voting for this election, sort of a drive up, because we use our ADA machines. It's actually a faster process to come in to the lobby and use those. But I think Linn County, Johnson County are doing like drive up only. They also have much larger staffs, and we have the building layout and the fact that the road next to the building is torn up.
It wasn't
really possible for us to do something like that. Mm-hmm. So, but if you cannot leave your vehicle, we will come out and bring a ballot to you. We would still encourage you to request one by mail, because you can still do that through May 22nd.
Now, let me just make clear one thing, that the absentee ballot that now you can ask for, is that for the June 2nd primary election?
Yeah.
But it's not for the November. You have to reapply.
You have to submit a separate request for that. You cannot submit a request for all elections.
Okay.
The mailing from the Secretary of State's office actually lists the date of the election and checks the primary box. If you use the form on ours, you can. We cannot legally accept request forms for November election until July 6th. That's 120 days. So you might want to keep a form and have that ready to turn in. I think a lot of people are already thinking about November, which is a good thing. We anticipate we will have greater absentee interest for that election as well. So I think we're going to see an uptick in absentees probably permanently from this point in time, and maybe even some groundswell of support for going to all mail balloting, which has been kicked around by auditors for at least 12 years. But and a lot of jurisdictions do really successfully. I'm thinking of Colorado, Oregon, and Washington State. Those are, I would say, the models, if anyone wants to look at one.
Lucy, in those states that have all mail-in voting, do they have higher rates of turnout generally?
I would say yes. I think that's one of the arguments to do all mail balloting, is you get a larger percentage of the populace participating, because just look at our numbers. It changed. Just simply sending a mailing that had an address on it that people could turn around. Now, I made my form postage paid, but it was a really different reaction when somebody got a piece of paper in the mail that they could just fill out, sign, and turn back in. So we have processed on a daily basis more absentee requests than we processed for any single day in the 2016 November election. That's how great the response has been.
So how will you handle that in the fall with an even bigger and more important, so we say, election in November? Do you have to hire extra staff? Is there things that you're going to have to do to handle this what could be this incredible rush in absentee voting in November?
Well, we always hire extra staff for a November election, probably up to 20 people in my office. We are also looking collectively as auditors to the state to see now with the push in absentees for this election, we also got temporary permission to consolidate precincts, which is not normally allowed in a federal election, because what happens if you have to process a huge number of absentee ballots, but you still have to open all of your precincts and be prepared for day of voting? It's a huge burden for just people wise, but it also and there's no cap on what you can spend on an election, but it's really expensive to do both. Like full out. So it's nice that we are going down to 10 precincts in Story County, which is good because we're trying to limit the number of people that actually show up on election day just for safety reasons, so that we can maintain that 6-foot distance, so that we can properly sanitize everything between voters, and that we can still process them in a timely manner. So I'm hoping that the numbers for absentee support that. For November, we'll see what happens. I don't know, you know, what the virus is going to look like then. I don't know if we will have similar emergency declarations in place. I don't know if the ISU students will be back in residence. There are so many factors to consider, but everything we're doing now, we're talking about how we could do it better in November.
Is there concern about the health risk of the poll workers themselves?
Yes, that was my main concern. We do have protective gear for them. Some we acquired ourselves, some we acquired through Secretary of State office working with FEMA and the National Guard to deliver that. So we have for the election workers gloves, surgical masks. There's actually these plastic face shields that some nerds at MIT cooked up that you sort of fold together and put on with hair elastics. Again, the one-time use pens. The hardest thing to find right now has been alcohol wipes, which we have very stringent protocols about how we can wipe down our computers and machines. And isopropyl alcohol seems to be the hardest thing to lay your hands on. So we do have, we're comfortable that we can support the 10 precincts, but if I had to do all 43, that would be a real struggle, I think.
Yeah. Now we're listening to the situation in Story County. Is voting pretty much similar? Is it pretty much happening the same in other counties? Because a lot of our listeners are not in Story County, really.
Right. And we had a little email chat yesterday with our association, and it looks like all counties are experiencing something like 10 times the number of absentee ballot requests that they would normally see in a primary election in a presidential year. The primary in the presidential year actually sees lighter turnout than the gubernatorial year because we have the caucus process. So the top of the ticket's not on our primary ballot. We do have some lively congressional races and local races. So, but yeah, 10 times the number of requests that are being processed. So, and the logistics of that, did I order enough envelopes? Did I order enough ballots? Do I have enough people to process today's mail? The answer in Story County for all those questions is yes, but some of the smaller counties are really feeling the stress of this.
Okay, well, thank you. This is Lucy Martin, Story County Auditor. And thank you for joining us, Lucy. And again, the deadline for mailing in the request for an absentee ballot is
Friday, May 22nd at 5 p.m. And that has to be in my office, but we do have a drop box outside in front of the building. And then you can vote in person through June 1st.
Okay. Thank you very much for joining us. Appreciate it.
You're welcome.
These are strange times. Everywhere you look, there's long lines to see you. And while we're at home, you're on the job until it's done and we see you. So this is for the ones in blue. I don't know how you do what you do. You're gonna get it, that doesn't bother you. But you're there on the line, always in control. Rest don't matter for the caregiver's soul. And you always put us first. Thank you, nurse. There will be better days. This'll be over soon someday, that's what I hear. But you'll carry on. Taking care of us is in your blood, and that's why you're here. And we're grateful for your tears. I don't know how you do what you do. You're gonna get it, that doesn't bother you. But you're there on the line, always in control. Rest don't matter to the caregiver's soul. And you always put us first. Thank you, nurse. how you do what you do, you're gonna get it, that doesn't bother you. But you're there on the line, always in control. Rest don't matter for the caregiver's soul. And you always put us first. I don't know how you do what you do, you're gonna get it, that doesn't bother you. But you're there on the line, always in control. Rest don't matter for the caregiver's soul. And you always put us first. Thank you, nurse. We thank you. We thank you. Thank you. We thank you. Thank you. Yeah. The rest don't matter for the caregiver's soul.
Hope you liked it. Wash your hands. Thank you, nurses.
Song for Nurses. Music and lyrics by Brad Emanuel. And this is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. I'm one of your hosts for the hour, Ursula Rudenberg, together with Ann Kinzel, hosting via Zoom.
We're going to talk about electricity for a few minutes. We need to know what to do if the lights go out. We'll be speaking to Mike Brown, electric distribution manager for the City of Ames. And of course, we're fortunate in Ames that electricity is publicly owned and provided. So, Mike, thanks for stopping by. Before we get to do with the lights, let's ask Susan if she has any announcements for us today. Susan Guiazda, Public Relations Manager for the City of Ames. What's up?
Just a reminder that May 12th is a significant City Council meeting and that the Council will be deciding policy regarding city events this summer. And that means events that the City sponsors, like the Pancake Breakfast on the 4th of July, as well as events on City property. And, you know, these are really tough decisions. And I just really ask that people be patient with these decisions and understand that they are being made with the public health and safety in mind. So I think when push comes to shove, being cautious is usually the way that we as policymakers tend to go. But we'll see on May 12th. So just sort of keep that date in mind as we move forward.
That meeting will be broadcast?
It is. All of our City Council meetings have moved on to the Zoom video conference format, and anybody can Zoom in. Also, remember, we have always video streamed those meetings from our website. And they are being streamed on YouTube, so that continues. Sometimes you may only get the audio, you may get audio and video, just depending on our connection at the time.
Well, thank you, Susan. So, Mike Brown, what do we do when the lights go out?
When your lights go out, hopefully that's not something you experience often. We try to keep the lights on. But in the event that, that you feel that you've lost power, the first thing that we ask you to do is check your whole house. Make sure that, your power is out. It could be partial power that you have. We need to know that. Or it could be some other issue that maybe your power is not out. Maybe you've just lost a light bulb, whatever that may be. So if you check your whole house, your power's out, the next thing that we would ask you to do is check your breakers. We encourage everybody to know where their breaker panel is at. And this sometimes is difficult if you live in an apartment complex. It's worthwhile to have your apartment manager or maintenance guy, his number available that you can check with him. Once you've determined that, in fact, your power is out and it's not an internal issue, you can check with your neighbors. You can, you know, look and see if the street lights are on. You can do all this type of thing. But really, what I encourage people to do, the best thing that you can possibly do, is if you go to the City of Ames website, you can go to cityofames.org/electric outage, and we have this really neat little map that shows ongoing outages in the Ames system. You can see if anybody else has called in. You can see if there's a scheduled outage. That map will give you all this information. Now, once you look at that and you determine that maybe there is an outage in your area, we still want you to call in. We have our outage hotline, which that number is 239-5240. And when you call in, it's an automated system. You're going to get a recording. But what happens is we have this really neat little system out here. It's called our outage management system. And what it does is when you make that phone call, it recognizes your phone number and associates it back to your account. And it gives us your information, tells us exactly where you're at the minute that you make that phone call. So then we can figure out then if you're part of an outage that's going on, if you're a new outage, and what the problem may be. It gives us insight into that. So I encourage people to use that outage hotline. Again, that's 239-5240.
If your electricity is out, obviously your computer is not going to work. So is the website that you're referring to, which I've looked at, it's really nice. It shows an outline of where the power outage is at. Obviously, you're going to have to be using your cell phone at this point.
Is this
a cell phone friendly?
Yes, it is. Website? So you can access. Yep, you can access the website. You can access the map. And I encourage people if they use their cell phones to bookmark this on their cell phones. Also, that way you can go right to it. Now that leads to another interesting thing that I wanted to talk about. Most people today rely on their cell phones. We still have people out there that do have landlines, and people will call in. Now, if it's a straight old-fashioned landline, it's not a wireless, it doesn't matter. If your power goes out, your telephone will still work. If you're using a wireless phone, a cordless phone, of course, then it relies on electricity and it won't work. But if you're calling in on your cell phone, this is where we run into a lot of problems with our outage management system, because people have not registered their cell phones with the system, with customer service here, electric customer service. So we can't make that association between the phone number and the electric account. So what I would like people to do is I would like them to call customer service and register their cell phones on their accounts. That way when they call with an outage on their cell phone, which most people do, we will still be able to pick that up and associate it with their electric account. Customer service, this is an important number, customer service, 239-5120.
Wow, so that's a really important little nuance that you just...
It is, yes. Yeah. And we've tried to get that word out there. We've encouraged people to call and register their cell phones with their account. So along those lines, what I'd like to do this morning is, you know, we've lost out on a lot of the events that normally take place throughout the year. The Eco Fair, of course, that was canceled. We don't know as far as our 4th of July parade. We don't know all these things that are going to be happening or not. So as a department, we always have some sort of promotional gifts that we give out, these things people remember in years past. We've given out bamboo utensil sets. We've given away yardsticks. We've given away all kinds of stuff. I've got some promotional gifts that I'd like to give away, and I don't know how we're going to be able to do that if we don't have these events. So I'm thinking what I'm going to do is people that call in and register their cell phones today with customer service, again, at 239-5120, I will get them a promotional gift from our department for this year.
What's the gift?
Well, the gift is a foam football. Ames, Iowa Electric foam football.
Something kids can throw around in the house while they can find,
yes.
Huh?
Yeah, you can throw it at the kids. You can throw it at anybody you want to. It's just a little foam football.
Okay. Well, I'm not sure you got me with the football, but I think it is a very nice gift for some other people. So repeat that again. I think that's a really great thing that you just offered. So just repeat it one more time.
Anybody that calls into customer service today at 239-5120, I will make sure, and I may just deliver these myself. If you call in and register your cell phone, we will deliver to you a promotional City of Ames foam football.
Okay, that's nice. That's something to do while you're in isolation, right?
Well, exactly. Yes, and
you know,
and it's a win-win for everybody.
And if you throw it around the house, it won't break the furniture, right?
Oh no, you won't break the windows with it.
Now, when you show up in people's homes, you're just going to open the door and throw them in?
I could open the door. So I could stand in the street and see if I could hit them from the street. I will place a football on your front stoop so you don't even have to answer the door.
Okay, we want it to be contactless delivery.
Now, this is what being a full-service city-owned electric utility means, right? You get the football delivered to the door.
Yeah, we said electricity is publicly provided, and there you go.
Yeah. And some way I have to get rid of these promotional gifts, so this is a win-win.
Okay, fantastic. Mike, before you go, I'm just curious. There was a pretty large power outage here in downtown Ames. Do you know what caused that?
The last one we had, and I'm assuming it's probably the one you're talking about, it was a equipment failure at a substation caused by what we believe was an animal contact. That was actually, we know it was an animal contact.
A raccoon?
It was a raccoon.
A raccoon.
So that's something we experience quite a bit, especially in the springtime of the year.
Yeah.
When raccoons and squirrels, we always on the lookout for the squirrels. They become particularly active, and we have ongoing, it's part of our maintenance program, ongoing program of animal guarding to try to keep the animals off the electric equipment, but they are very determined to get where they're not supposed to be, and occasionally one of them will succeed. And that was the case with this, was we had a raccoon that got on top of a transformer and shorted out the transformer.
Oh, that's always sad to hear. Okay, well, thank you so much for joining us, Mike Brown, Electric Distribution Manager for the City of Ames. We appreciate the information. And what are your parting words? And Susan, thank you as well. Appreciate having you here.
Yeah. So in parting, I just want people to be aware that if they do have a power outage, please use the our power outage hotline at 239-5240. That is the quickest way for us to know where the problem is and for us to get on it and get your power back on for you.
Okay. Thank you so much. Really appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Okay. Ms. Anna Banana Bread, are you there?
Anna Banana Bread's here. And Mike Brown, I am getting that football. I am registering my phone. So I'll be ready to do a touchdown and do the touchdown dance with my football.
There you go. Call in. I'll get you a football.
All right. I love it. Yep, so it's Anna Banana in the house, and I love that moment of lightness, just because for Anna Banana, as Story County is among the 77 Iowa counties to loosen the social distancing measures, I have to admit that it scares me a bit. So now your Anna Banana is a bit of a scaredy cat. I am frightened of clowns, narrow roads and high cliffs, quicksand, the tails on rats, and mullets. So perhaps it's just that I'm a scary cat by nature. So as I thought about my fear, Dr. Dewitt, who is a speaker, author, coach, and a go-to leadership and life expert for LinkedIn Learning, made me think about my own fears, and he shared this heart-to-heart message. What are you afraid of? Most people are paralyzed by fear. Most fears are irrational. Consequently, most people are acting irrationally. I acknowledge that fear can be useful, though very often it is not. Fear drives us to think about many threats and constraints, and most of them are not real or overblown. There are many crippling varieties of fear. I can change my standard of living. I don't want to take the risk since I'm married. I can't do that. I have kids. I don't want to risk others seeing me fail. I don't have the extra time to do that. The list is long. Fears amuse me at some level. Don't get me wrong. I experience them too. But I keep asking myself, what are you afraid of? Then I recall the obvious. We all leave the planet in the same manner. It's unavoidable. What makes us different is how we choose to live. I've read many books, blogs, and posts that address this issue. However, likely, dementia has had the biggest impact of Steve Jobs' famous Stanford University graduation speech. Fresh from a fight he won against cancer, one he later fought again and lost, he reminded us to look past common fears to make the choice to truly live. More specifically, he told us to look back and connect the dots. For me, this is a call for reflection, perspective, and personal growth. He told us to expect love and loss. I translate this to mean you win some and you lose some, but don't let the losses or pains ever stop you from experiencing the wins and joys. Finally, he said, to live as if this was your last day. A classic call to examine the use of your time. When I put all this together, I must ask myself, how many days are you willing to not live fully before you call BS and start to make changes? It's not an easy question. It is, however, one of the most important questions you'll face in your life. For me, this is serious. I accept the lows as part of the journey that gives me so many life-defining highs. I failed many times, often on a large scale, and publicly. Fine. I choose to persevere, learn, and try again. This attitude has taken me to places that still blow my mind. Thanks for that reminder, Steve. Now I'm reminding you. Connect the dots, expect love and loss, and live today as if it were your last. Or you can play it safe and endeavor to minimize all risks in your life. If you succeed, you'll surely be boring. If you choose to follow Steve's advice and attempt to live more fully, sure, you'll experience serious bumps in the road, but at least you'll have a few amazing stories to tell, and you certainly won't be boring. Well, thank you, Dr. Dewitt, for your heart-to-heart message. And I think no matter the life circumstances, including living with the COVID-19 pandemic, we don't need to let fear interfere with embracing life. We're still telling our amazing stories. But I also say I certainly want to embrace life and not be boring, but Anna Banana doesn't want to be stupid either. So I will continue to wear my mask, keep 6 feet apart from others, and use my moisturizing hand sanitizer often. You know, and as I read Dr. Dewitt's heart-to-heart message, I thought this could be easily turned into a commencement speech for the class of 2020. And by the way, congratulations to all the graduates. And I know that you're disappointed by the cancellation or postponement of your celebrations. But just remember Dr. Dewitt's words of wisdom. You'll experience serious bumps in the road. Can we say COVID-19 pandemic? But at least you'll have a few amazing stories to tell. Right, like how life was put on a global pause and how our patience was tested. But there were these extraordinary acts of generosity and kindness, like hosting these virtual Zoom parties or organizing food drives to ensure that no child goes hungry in our community. And you certainly won't be boring. No, this is not a boring tale. And so from what could be a commencement speech and moving to from a leadership expert to a heart-to-heart message taken from a book written by a retired academic advisor at the University of Iowa. So Marion Clark is the author of 60-something and Flying Solo, A Retiree Sorts It Out in Iowa. And guess where this book was published? Right here in Ames, Iowa. That's right. The Culidus Press is a peer-reviewed publishing house that was founded by Mikesh Mukha and Miriam Zak in 2005 to serve creative writers and their readers worldwide with an alternative to traditional publishers. So here is Marion's heart-to-heart message. Just let things unfold, I tell myself. Stay open to whatever comes. Relax into it. Stay open. Open, open, open. I take a deep breath and glance toward the pond. The geese are gone. The geese who raise their goslings when they can and fly off to do some goosey thing when they can't. Breathe in, breathe out. Let things unfold. An idea without end, something I hope to never cross off my list. So thank you, Marion, and Culidus Press here, and Ames, and Dr. Todd Dewitt for your heart-to-heart message that remind us to be fearless, to stay open no matter what life throws at us. So if you would like to respond to any of these messages, I invite you to call or text me, Anna Banana, at 515-809-0077. Or if you have a heart-to-heart message that you'd like to leave with me, you can call again, 515-809-0077. Or you can email me at khoiradio@gmail.com and put heart-to-heart in the subject line, please. So we hope that our heart-to-heart messages inspire you to connect to our community. And from the bottom of our hearts, KHOI and Anna Banana, thank you for listening. And we send out our love to each of you today. And a reminder to get your football from Mike Brown.
Thank you, Anna Banana. And Anna Banana, I have for you the prayer of the year, which goes like this. Dear God, please uninstall year 2020 and make a new one available for us to download. This one has a virus.
Aww. It's good to laugh during these times.
Anyway, you've been listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. We've been your hosts, Ann Kinzel and Ursula Rudenberg. Thank you for listening. Local Talk will be aired again today at noon, And be sure to listen between 7 and 8 tonight for night 2 of KHOI's COVID Response Virtual Pantorium Session, featuring a collage of the best of Pantorium sessions, local musicians performing locally. KHOI is streaming live online at khoifm.org, so you can hear it there or at 89.1 FM. Thanks to Larry Red Stoltenberg for last night's wonderful virtual Pantorium session. And remember that you can hear a recording of this show later today at khoifm.org.
Our theme song, as always, is Backtracking by Tom Richards and Al Harris from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. We also heard What Makes a Hero by Vanessa Chu and Songs for Nurses by Brad Emanuel. Remember, you, the listener, are what makes KHOI meaningful and possible. Thank you for listening and supporting KHOI, and we'll see you again on the radio.